Have you spent any time thinking about how you boot up your day? I'm confident that we all expect our phones, tablets, and computers to boot up in the same way each time we turn them on.
We can all benefit from reflecting and assessing how we are living our lives and spending our days. Jesus viewed his prayer time as a place of essential communication,
a source of vital connection with his Father in heaven to learn and implement his Father's will for the earth.
It was his daily rhythm to rise and commune with God.
When it comes to booting up your day,
one size fits one.
How you boot up will look different from how I do.
But we can all benefit from finding a personal rhythm of grace, routines, rituals, and rhythms to be sure to touch on what is most important on a regular basis, helping us build an operating system for life.
It's only by keeping our disciplines at the core of our boot up process that we are going to be able to systematically keep our lives in order.
All right, blessings to all of you. So good to be able to share this time together. I want you to be so blessed. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, I'm Pastor Terry, lead pastor here at Cornerstone Church in San Francisco. You know, our series is The Faith Code. I want to talk about rhythms of grace. And even now, Lord, I just invite your goodness and grace into this time we're about to share. You know, I began pastoring as a youth pastor. It was my senior year of high school. And I started pastoring actually here in this church at the ripe old age of 17. So, wow, I can't barely even believe it. It was almost 44 years ago. And when I started, my grandfather was the only pastor. He had started the church with a couple of families in a house, and he was my hero, my mentor, the closest thing I ever had to a real father figure that I could look up to and respect, right? And, you know, he was a bivocational pastor, though, because the church was so small. He had to work a second job, and he drove a muni bus here in San Francisco. I'll never forget it. But he was tough. I mean, he was from that World War II generation, that greatest generation fiber. He had a pioneer mentality, and well, I look back in time, and every now and then I tell this story about how I was scheduled to preach on a Sunday. I think I was about 21 or 22 years old. And during that week, I got real sick. And I called my grandfather on a Sunday morning, and I told him I had a temperature, that I was in bed with a fever, a sore throat, that I was weak and miserable. I had the flu, basically. And I said, Gramps, that's what I called him. He was my grandfather. And remember, there are no cell phones, only these landlines and cordless phones that look like, they look like walkie-talkies, basically. Like, they were also from the World War II era, almost in size. I said, Gramps, I don't think I can make it. I think I might need you to step in for me. I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, can you walk? And I said, well, let me see. I said, I think I can. Yeah, I think I can. And he said, good. Then I'll see you in a bit. And he hung up. It's like, oh, and that was, and I remember sharing that message. I don't know what I shared, but I remember I found my way. And you know, his ethic infused me from the outset. And even now, partially defines me as the ethic of our mentors usually do. I mean, you think about the people in your life who have been mentor figures, and it's impossible for part of who they were not to find their way into us, right? But as the years passed, and you know, I'm looking back now, and I no longer had him in my life. And he died when I was 25, right? My wife and I had just had our first born a son. His name was Caleb. I remember my grandfather, as he was dying, was able to hold him. And that was very special for me, right? But I began to learn that if I was going to survive, you know, because I had to start pastoring, and I was so young, and, you know, the one who had being someone I looked up to was gone. And so there were certain things I was going to have to learn on my own. And I remember learning that if I was going to survive, I was going to need to learn how to rest in healthy, life-giving ways. Or otherwise, one of the two things was going to happen. One, and actually almost did happen a few times, if I'm being honest, which I want to be. That if I did not learn how to rest properly as I was leading the church, I realized soon I was either going to burn out or flame out. That I was either going to disintegrate under the pressure or destroy myself. Yeah. And everything that I loved and felt called to do. Like, that was part of my growth process. It's part of what I had to go through. And honestly, I'm still learning. I really am. But the truth is that by the time many of us get to the weekend or whatever serves as our version of a weekend, about all the energy we can muster is just enough to pull the plug. And many of us are tired. That's the truth. You know it, and I know it. Many of us are tired. Maybe some of you are checking in right now, and you're very tired. And I think most of us understand that when we are tired, we're more prone to discouragement. We're more prone to addictive and unhealthy behavior. Some of us are more prone to irritability. We're certainly more prone to depression. Tired people make mistakes. And very tired people tend to make more mistakes. And if I can say it, bigger mistakes. And what's worse is that those mistakes not only hurt us, they often hurt people, even people we love a lot. And we don't want to do that. I mean, we don't want to hurt people. We don't want to hurt people we love, right? We are a healed people. And because we have Christ in our lives, I mean, we've really made a decision, as I hope all of us have. And if you haven't made that decision, I want to encourage you to do that. And don't be afraid to let us know if you're at a point in your life where you want to follow Jesus and you want to open up your heart to him. But God wants us to be a people who are able to love healthily, but we can't do that when we're beat up, bound up, discouraged, overwhelmed by things. And a lot of times that's what happens when we get tired. Now, the Bible actually has a lot of practical and valuable principles to teach us about how to cultivate a healthy mind and body. And perhaps the best place to begin is with what we call the Ten Commandments. Now, I realize that for some of us, the idea of going back to the Older Testament to gain insight for modern living may seem like a bit of a reach. Some people wonder how the law of Moses can be anything but constrictive. I mean, you know, when you talk about the Old Testament, it just sounds like a bunch of do's and don'ts. Thou shalt not hardly comes across as liberating, right? And yet, there's so much for us there, right? It's important to remember that these commands, yeah, even the Ten Commandments, were given by God to help guide his people in the blessed life. Israel, as some of you may know, not everyone would, had been an enslaved nation in Egypt. And when they were set free by God and miraculously led out of bondage under the leadership of Moses, they did so without any national identity. I mean, remember, generations had been enslaved, and they did not know how to be a free people. And we know that just when you read the scriptures, you can see it. Especially when you read those first five books, what's called the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. When you read that, and then you add on to that the book of Joshua, that sixth book, you begin to realize that part of what God was trying to do was grow them into something healthy. They had been highly dysfunctional. And even after the Lord delivered them under the leadership of Moses out of Egypt with a mighty hand, he may have got them out of Egypt, but he had a hard time getting Egypt out of them. I'll say that one more time. God may have got them out of Egypt, but he had a hard time getting Egypt out of them. They had not experienced freedom for generations. So when they were given the law and the Ten Commandments, it was a gift to guide them, almost like a constitution. It gave them a framework for their social, moral, religious, and national life. And towards the end of his life, when Moses was giving the people he had led and loved his final words of guidance. He said this in the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, and I want to share it with you right now. He said this. He said, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear?" We deeply respect, reverence, right? That's what he means by fear. "But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep his commandments," right? "To keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good." Did you notice that last phrase? For your good. I mean, it's clear that God gave them these instructions and commands for their benefit and for their blessing. And that's so important for us to remember, because the law of Moses in general was given by God as a gift. And the Ten Commandments form the core of the law. And as such, they are power-packed, distilled truths designed to help us live a life of meaning and impact. And that does connect with the faith code. You know, the first three commands, the first of the Ten Commandments, all focused on Israel's special relationship with God. Think about it. They were to love no other God. And secondly, they were to make no false representations of him. No graven images, no idols. Now, that was something that they had seen in their time in Egypt. And so it was really important to God for them not to misrepresent him in any way. That the idea that somehow we can worship something that we can shape with our own hands. But that would have been the temptation to go back to what they had known. And the third commandment reminded them not to use his name in a demeaning way. You know, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And if you think about it this way, the first three, they were meant to safeguard the unique and beautiful relationship they enjoyed, right? It was designed for God to say, we are in relationship. I love you and I want you to love me. But as wonderful as the first three were, it's number four that has the most to say to us about how to cultivate a healthy mind and body, which is where I want us to focus. Whereas the first three commands were positioned in a negative, the fourth of the Ten Commandments is positioned in a positive. They were to, here it is, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. They were told they needed to keep the Sabbath, set it apart. The Sabbath was day seven of the week, Saturday for us. It was a reminder to his people, yeah, this is really important. The Lord was letting them know these people who had only known work, and the work they had known, it was the work of the worst kind, right? For they were not free. And he wanted them to remember, and this is the core of that fourth command, to honor the Sabbath, to keep the Sabbath. He wanted them not to be defined by their work, because their work had been characterized by forced labor, and their work had been insidious and relentless. They had worked for generations without purpose. Their mindless labor had robbed them of so much of the joy that good, life-giving work can bring. So after their liberation, it would have been a difficult transition for them just to learn how to work for their own benefit and by their own volition. And yet, what I think is most fascinating to understand is that God did not just want them to this is so important. He did not want them just to transfer their identity from enslaved worker to liberated worker. I mean, part of what we're being reminded of here is the Lord was saying, I realize you have not known healthy work. And I don't want you to ever think that work is how you are defined. But he didn't want them just to go from an enslaved worker to a liberated worker in terms of where they found their true identity. He wanted them to find their identity in him. Now that, again, that idea of going from an enslaved worker to a liberated worker would have been a natural transition. And certainly it proved to be far more fulfilling than anything they had previously known. But God, who loved them and the one who loves us, essentially commanded them with this fourth command to do two things that were in their own way, they were just radical. Right? And there's no way around it. To be given this command for their well-being, one thing they were told to do was they were to remember to, again, in this fourth command, And you're going to see how it's going to connect in a moment here to what we're trying to talk about in terms of rhythms of grace. But one, they were to remember that their identity was to be found not primarily in relation to their work, but in their relationship to Him. So they were to being told, I don't want you to find your identity firstly in your work, even good work, but in your relationship to me. And then secondly, they were being reminded to be a people who incorporated non-work, or what we would call rest, into their weekly schedule. And I wonder if we can appreciate how revolutionary that was for human beings, yet alone for a young nation that had never known a healthy national identity. I mean, to be commanded to rest, to know that they were not to live simply by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God, as Deuteronomy 8:3. I mean, that was radical. And if you think about it, God Himself had modeled this principle in the beginning of creation by resting on the seventh day. You can read about that in Genesis. At the end of that first chapter in the Genesis account, we're told that God looked over all that He had made and He saw that it was very good. And evening passed away and morning came, making the sixth day. And then immediately following, at the opening of chapter 2, we're told, so the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. And on the seventh day, God had finished His work of creation. And so He rested from all His work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy. That is, He declared that day sacred and special because it was the day when He rested from all His work of creation. Now, if God, who is without limit, chose to limit His work by resting on day seven, what does that mean for us, us mere mortals, with all of our frailties and limitations? I mean, you think about it. God is the source of creative energy and therefore the possessor of an infinite amount of it. And yet we are told He rested, not because He was tired. I think we understand God does not get tired, but at least in part because He wanted to mark the moment and enjoy His creation. The master artist, the great designer, paused and rested from His creative work to appreciate the beauty of what His hands had wrought. Not unlike the painter who pulls away to view her painting from a different perspective and vantage point, God pulled back to reflect on the goodness of what He had brought to life. It was a masterpiece of unparalleled complexity, vast, grand, and uniquely satisfying. And by the way, something we're still learning that we know so little about. I mean, every year, science and just reveals so much of what we didn't even know. And we learn that there's so much more going on than we realized. And one more thing, and it's a little bit of a shift here, but we also know that Jesus, God's Son, our great example of how to live as a totally fulfilled human being. We know that Jesus kept the Sabbath, didn't He? I mean, in Luke 4, we're reminded, so He came to Nazareth where He had been brought up, and as His custom was, He went into the synagogue. We would say He went to church on the Sabbath day. See, Jesus had a custom, a practice, a habit of going to church on the day of rest, and He is our best example. Now, after the resurrection of Christ, the first Christian believers, who, by the way, were all Jewish, that's important to remember, they set aside Sunday, the first day of the week, the day on which Jesus rose. They set it aside as the Lord's Day. So that's where the shift occurs, from a Saturday to a Sunday. Historically, some have referred to it as the Christian Sabbath. For generations now, followers of Jesus have met on the first day of the week as a special time on Sunday, as a special time for community, worship, reflection, and celebration. And yeah, so even though the emphasis of the day has changed since the time of the resurrection of Christ, the principle of Sabbath rest has not been lost. In fact, I really believe this. It may be more needed now than ever. The complexity of life, the pervasiveness of technology has meant that we have less truly restful time than any generation preceding us. I mean, all these time-saving devices, they do save us time. I mean, in astonishing ways. They allow us to access information in ways that it's just incredible how fast. Like, any kind of information so quickly, and it's only going to increase as AI begins to progress. Of course, there's a lot of discussion going on about that right now, and understandably so, because, you know, at what point does this get out of control? And yet, it's not just in terms of how to acquire information quickly, but it's also just how to communicate rapidly. I mean, think about how fast we can communicate with people on just totally, you know, other places in the world. So it's just an unparalleled time of opportunity and breakthrough. But at the same time, we know that it is designed to be, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but it is designed to be addictive. And we, you and me, a lot of us, we spend so much time engaging technology now. So the time-saving aspect of it is also a little bit mitigated by the time we waste just scrolling through things or, you know, on mindless stuff that just sucks up a lot of time and energy. And honestly, I think it wears us out. It does. It does. We're kind of in a stuck, though, between a rock and a hard place because we can't become a Luddite. We can't be anti-technology and just totally disconnect. We still have to function. And yet at the same time, we're kind of stuck between we need to use it. And yet if we're not careful, it begins to become overwhelming. And I think it does contribute to making us far more tired, far more anxious. And certainly it does affect many of us in our own self-esteem and well-being. So what can we learn then from the Sabbath principle? The command that was given specifically to Israel, and what I think still applies to us today as followers of Jesus. What can it teach us about how the God who designed us wants us to think about our health and our well-being? Well, for one, it reminds us that we all need to have time to rest and be replenished at all levels. I'm talking about physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Again, for Israel of the Older Testament, and for a vast majority of Christians in previous generations, the Sabbath was not an option that they squeezed into their schedules if they had time or got their work done. For them, and I'm talking about not generations not that far, we're not far removed from them. For them, the Sabbath was a time to be in community with other believers and to enjoy healthy rest. And it was the big rock of the week, just as it seems to have been for Jesus. And everything else worked off of it. So the Sabbath rest was the non-negotiable part of their lives because they believed God had set it in place as both a command and a gift. It was a gift from the God of creation, who wanted, as I mentioned earlier, his people to be healthy and whole. And I still think that's true today. God wants us to be healthy and whole. And so we really should pay attention to this Sabbath principle. Another aspect of it, though, is that it's important for our health and well-being in the sense that it helps us to refocus. So it's a time not only for replenishment and enjoyment, it's a time to evaluate our priorities. And it can serve us because it gives us the ability to gain perspective. And in that regard, it becomes more of a compass than a crutch. Less of a coping mechanism and more of a guide. So it's not that I have to do the Sabbath. I get to do it. I get to implement it in my life. If I'm restfully honoring God at a key moment in my week, and again, for most of us, if we can do that on Sunday, and that's not suggesting that the rest of the week doesn't matter or we shouldn't be honoring the Lord in it. There's something about uniquely setting aside some aspect of a Sabbath where we are listening for the Lord's voice, we are engaging him, we are open, and we are evaluating our life. So part of what it helps us do is understand ourselves better. It's sort of like listening to our lives. It becomes a tool for negotiating life's complexities, delays, and yes, disappointments. When we prayerfully engage it, God can move because we're creating space and we're lowering the volume of all the voices. Many of us, though not all, can easily drift into the driven life. I know I can. And that is why we can easily become consumed sometimes with astonishing ease in the pursuit of temporal things. It's amazing how quickly we can get sucked into that: work, career, hobbies, various other interests and passions, some of which, most of which aren't even bad. They're good, but the good can become the enemy of the best. It can. Like, if the good squeezes out space for God and space for truly knowing ourselves, if the good makes us more tired, then I don't know if it's as helpful as we think. But the good can become the enemy of the best. That is for certain, if we're leaving God out of the equation. And when we're tired, though, when we're overstretched, when we're focused on the wrong things, we tend to lose track of what matters, right? We lose our focus. We start to give too much attention to things that are less important and less attention to things that are more important. And so we would do well, loved ones, to align our priorities with what God defines as most important. And one of the best ways, and this is what we're suggesting, this is what I'm suggesting right now, I try to remind myself of this all the time, is that one of the best ways that we can align ourselves with what is most important and to make sure that we're not drifting into the unworthy or getting stuck in good things that we're missing the best things, is that we are periodically and consistently, there's a rhythm to it, pulling back and intentionally aligning our life to the true reality of Scripture and the unseen but often felt spiritual realm. And part of the Sabbath principle's brilliance is that it incorporates this practice into a weekly rhythm. You see that? Do you see that? Do we understand that? So ideally, there is a dailiness and a weekliness, not a weakness, a weekliness to our walk with Jesus. A dailiness and a weekliness to our walk with Jesus. So that we've got little rocks and big rocks, and together they're revealing and making possible a life of blessing, not problem-free, but a life that's filled with the grace and goodness of God. Think about it, the daily and the weekly. Give us this day. Jesus said, pray like this, our daily bread. So each day I need to open and reconnect to Jesus. Give us this day our daily bread, Father in heaven. But also, we need a big rock day. That is, okay, we need to sabotage our life. Yeah, that isn't a real word. That's where I made that word up. But you know what I'm trying to get at. We don't want to sabotage our life. We want to sabotage our life. And that is by making sure that we are a people who live in the weekly rhythm. Like, we are making it a priority. We, those of us who are parents and grandparents, or who have influence, we're trying to encourage the people we love to also do what Jesus did and have that weekly aspect to our life with Christ in this case, right? In Jesus' case, he was part of a believing people honoring the Father above. And this idea of having one day in the week, so we honor the Lord daily, but then we also set aside a special day built around following the custom and practice of Jesus, going to church, a day of specific, dedicated reorientation where we pray, where we worship, where we engage community, where we contemplate the Scriptures and intentionally align ourselves with the way of Jesus. When we can say with David, who said in Psalm 122:1, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go to the house of the Lord. So going to his house, pulling back and leaning into God in a big rock way allows us to have enormous amounts of soul nutrients pumped in and brings real tangible benefits to our body, soul, and spirit. I think you can tell, like, I believe in the power of honoring the Lord in the Sabbath and honoring the Lord with a dedicated day. And that rhythm established in our life produces life. So, going back to where we started, what I'm basically saying is the Lord invites us to create space for grace. He invites us to create space for grace. And he awaits, you ready for this one? He awaits our RSVP. What is that, you say? Well, in my mind, he wants us to, here it is, R, respond to his command. Right? Implement the Sabbath principle. Honor him in the daily, but especially on the week. That one day a week is so important, that Sabbath principle, which is for our good, to reduce life's complexity. So R, respond to his command, that we might S, serve him better, and ultimately others as well, by minimizing the V, velocity of our life, to enhance simplicity and sabbatize so that we can align with our P, purpose, and prevail. You got that? Right? That's what the Lord wants us to do. He wants us to live in such a way that is life-giving. Now, let's keep that in mind as we share this together. But even now, Lord, I just ask that you would speak to our hearts. Help us to enjoy this point of worship, this song. And then I'll come back around, and share one more thought. So here we go.
Is a light for your cause, my will laid aside for your call, and reserved are the depths of my heart only for you. I'm caught in the rhythms of grace, they overcome all of my ways. Realigning each step every day to live for your glory. There's none beside you, God. There's none.
Lord, you care about us so much. That's why you gave us the principle of the Sabbath. That's why you reminded us of the value of rhythm and rest. It really is a reflection of your grace and your love. We are more fragile than we know. We are beings with limitation. You aren't. And you long for us to be well. You long for us to be blessed, certainly more well and more blessed than we are now. How can we say we love you, Lord? What a God. How good you are, Lord. I pray right now for all of my friends, all of us who've shared this time together. I pray for your blessing, that the good God and the goodness of God would rest upon your life, and that he would keep you, loved one, in every way. Yeah, I do. I pray that right now, that he would keep you in your spirit, in your soul, in your mind, and in your body, in all ways, in Jesus' name.